WKGN. 1-3-4-0.
Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios in Knoxville, it's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio. Here are your hosts, John Reed and Bob Baskerville.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Happy Monday morning to you. It's John Reed, Bob Baskerville, Sam Beard. The Fan Run Radio Morning Show is live. Bob, top of the morning to you. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm good. It was kind of a nice, relaxing weekend. Had a busy Saturday morning. We all did. But beyond that, it was nice and chill. Watched some basketball. Saw some friends Saturday evening. It was all good. How about you?
Yeah, I was going to say, speak for yourself on the relaxing. I've been stressed for a month now. I was stressed Friday and stressed Saturday morning. Now, after Saturday morning, after the golf tournament concluded, I didn't pretty much leave my couch the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
Other than to go get food and take my dog outside and take trash out and such. Otherwise, I was pretty much plopped down on the couch watching sports. So I would say you're half correct, but I thought the golf tournament, once it quit raining, was pretty damn good. The beginning of the morning when it was raining and cold. See, Bob timed it out perfectly. Bob didn't get there until the rain had quit. But Bob timed it out perfectly. He got there about 20 minutes into it. The rain was over. The golfers were already out on the course. But that 45 minutes to an hour before then, when it was cold, rainy, and we're trying to get everything set up, That was rough. But thanks to the golfers for staying patient and for not going home. We had a couple teams not show up with the rain, and I can't say I blame them, but credit to everyone who showed up and showed out. It was a fun day. Sam, people were glowing at your game.
Yeah.
Saying you were as good as advertised, but not good enough to win the Fan Run Open. Not even good enough to win first place for people in the office here. You got third.
Yeah, I did.
In the office.
I got third. You can't win every tournament, I guess.
And you had an extra player and a caddy.
Yeah, we did. We did.
A team of six out there.
I can't say that I have any excuses this morning here on Monday.
Long Friday night.
Yeah, a long Friday night. I will say that it, I can't even say that hindered us at the start, because I probably hit my best shot of the day on the first hole. So, you know, I think I just got to throw my hats off to only Tim. I'm not putting my hats off to Jake. I'll throw my hat off to Aaron Medley, I guess. And then, yeah, I mean, it's going to motivate me. It'll stick with me.
Hold on, Jake didn't win. I don't want the audience to think Jake won. He did. His team did beat the Fan Run team, but Tim Hill and his team here in the office, they got first place, just for the record. I don't want people going around thinking G.I. Jake's team won.
No, G.I. Jake was not winning. He was cheating to try to win.
There may be some special post-match coverage I've heard today, too.
Really?
With the new champ, and yeah, you never know.
Interesting.
You have to give it a listen. Sam, you had a chance there because of your entourage, like John mentioned. You could have rolled your caddy under the bus or something there.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to roll Marcus under the bus, because I think he probably gave me a – we had a little dispute over a club on the 18th hole where we needed a birdie to keep it rolling, and I think he thought I should have needed – I think it was a 9-iron he was trying to give me, and I took an 8, and we all hit it over the green. So I kind of took it. I took it on the chin a little bit.
So Marcus was right. He was actually out there caddy.
I was going to say he was actually giving you club advice.
And I couldn't trust the club advice, because for the front nine I had to teach him like how the club numbers worked. it was like a 100-yard hole, and he pointed it like the 4-iron. I was like, well, opposite of that, but yeah, like we're getting close. Wow. So it was a psychological battle all day long. I didn't know if he was just messing with me or if I had to trust my gut.
Yeah. I've got a couple decent videos I got to load into the file today, the Google file, so maybe we can get that stuff out on socials. One of Sam teeing off looks good. One of the drives, Houston Crest dropping a putt.
Yeah.
Nice one, actually.
Houston had the flat stick rolling.
Yeah, I had a good angle on that one, too. So, yeah, some good moments from your team, but not enough,
yeah.
Alas.
Now, we got back to the drawing board, and we'll be back next year, motivated, ready to go.
That's the thing, man. There were people definitely chatting it up, saying, you know, when can we do it again? And, you know, it's like, John's over here going, yeah, take it easy.
Give me a couple weeks.
Yeah, give me a year. But it was a fun event, and the weather turning was huge, huge, huge. I mean, because that made everybody kind of a feel-good ending for it, for sure.
Feel-good ending, slap in the face, whichever one you want to call it, from Mother Nature. I thought it was a slap in the face.
Sure was.
From Mother Nature, that it was so pretty as we were leaving. As I was wet, a little cold.
You guys did a good job. You and Ryan did the heavy lifting on it. So congratulations. That was a good first effort.
You talk about people asking to do it again. Hell, Houston Crest himself was trying to get something planned for the fall. I was like, oh, God.
You got this one, pal.
Yeah, it's 5 months from now. Okay. We're trying to be like, oh, Florida weekend, you know, big game weekend, bye weekend. What do we do? And I was like, oh, geez. So let me go home and lay down. Like I said, I didn't really move on Saturday afterwards. Just kind of plopped down.
I had to keep rolling. Like, I went back to Nashville after that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You went to go see Shane Gillis?
Yeah.
How was that?
Incredible. Incredible show. I thought I was going to be dragging when I got there because we did the late show, like the 9:30 one, but it was awesome. He had three or four openers. Theo Vaughn came out before Gillis. Gillis went on for about an hour. Yeah, it was a great time.
Did Theo Vaughn actually do a set?
Yeah, kind of. I would say Theo Vaughn was honestly the worst one that came out. Like, I think the other openers that he brought in had better material. He was just doing a lot of his old stuff.
Is Theo Vaughn actually funny at stand-up? I feel like he's better just at, like,
podcasts and all,
yeah,
that,
like,
stuff.
Bouncing back and forth, yeah, off of people.
I agree.
My son's a big Theo Vaughn fan.
He's a good, yeah, he's funny. Yeah. But I thought in terms of, like, actual just stand-up, he was probably the worst one.
Every time I see Theo Vaughn, I just think about him on The Real World and the challenge and everything. That's how I was introduced to him, yeah, you know, 20 years ago. So yeah, it's still a little weird to me that some of the most famous comedians in the world are the Fear Factor guy and the guy that used to be running around on the challenge. Like, it takes a second for me to have to compartmentalize that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, successful weekend with the Fan Run Open. Again, shout-out to the sponsors and shout-out to everyone that came out. We will do it again. Not sure when, but we will do it again. It was a big success, and yeah, I appreciate everyone on the team that did their part. Appreciate Cherokee. They had us loaded down with some booze. At first, I think people were like, ah, it's 9 a.m. I don't really know if I want to drink, but by the third lap I made around that course, people were flagging me down wanting some stuff. So I think it did help the putting contest at the end of the day, too. So fun time. Appreciate Cherokee for their support, as always.
Williams Creek, good host, man. That was a pro tip, though, if you're there. It's a scenic course, but if it's wet, proceed with caution in the golf carts, man. I did a 360 spin in mine, and heard Bear might have almost flipped one. I mean,
well, I heard Bear almost wrecked, like, twice. Like, he did it right coming down at the beginning, and then I was down there about an hour later, and he almost did it again. And I was like, did you really not learn your lesson? Did you really not learn your lesson? Like, he was not a surprise when you tell me he almost wrecked, but to hear Bob did a 360, it really surprised me.
Surprised me. I was smart, at least, so I took my foot off the brake and just let it, you know, whatever happened. But it was kind of creekside, man. It
yeah.
Could have got rough.
I would have thought of all people that would realize, hey, it's wet, we're going down a hill, let's creep down the hill. I thought Bob would have had that figured out, but no, apparently just flying down.
Did you have any problems with the golf cart?
Not at all. No.
Okay.
And I wasn't creeping. I mean, I wasn't flying. I was creeping. That's how bad that incline was. There was a couple tough ones.
I don't know. I drove down that same course five times, and I didn't have any issues at all. So somebody was going a little fast, Bob. Somebody was going a little fast for being a little reckless because, again, I made that trek.
It would have been a disaster if you flipped and, you know, we had – cooler full of drinks fly out.
Cooler full of drinks, a drink rep in the front seat.
Yeah.
I was liable for somebody else. It would have been a whole thing. But No, me and Jake had to go down when in the pouring rain and put out all the signs, which shout out to Jake if he's listening. I know you guys have made fun of him for finishing in second, but he was my MVP because I got stuck with 9 signs to put in front of the holes and I was going to get out in the rain, and he hopped in and went and did it for me. So I just had to pull up and he hopped out and did it. It was like I was back on the farm and had a little kid with me to go open the gates. I got it with my nephew or a cousin or something to go open the gates so I didn't have to get out. That's how it felt. It was a nice throwback. So shout out to Jake for putting up all the signs.
He really missed on his choice of headwear, though. He went visor in just the pouring rain. He came back to the clubhouse just angry after printing those signs out. He's like, I got the wrong damn hat on right now, man.
Well, I messed up. I didn't wear a hat, nor did I put on sunscreen because it was overcast and I thought the golf cart was going to protect me. But then I've realized my head has gotten sunburnt. Mm. It's red. It's hot. It's going to peel soon. I don't really want to put, like, lotion in my head, like in my hair.
So I've never even thought of that, honestly.
Yeah.
That is such a pain in the ass, probably.
Yep, I'm sunburnt. Typically, I'll wear a hat if I'm outside, but okay. I did not think to wear a hat because it was raining. And I don't like wearing hats in the rain. I'd rather just have my bald head get wet versus having a damp hat, and it just don't feel good.
I know we were kind of wrapping it up, but it just reminded me. There was one more thing, too. There was a team under investigation during the tournament, too.
It is a little fishy. They got off to a really good start, and then word got out that they were under investigation, and then they, like, parred the next, like, 8 holes. they went from 5 birdies in 6 holes to you know, then still being 5 under through 13. It was very strange, and it was Brett's team, and Jake was mad, and people were throwing out accusations, and I don't know. I saw Brett hit a really good shot on his first shot. Not as good as yours, Sam. I saw a picture of yours. Not as good as yours, but for a while, Brett was the closest to the pin on our TV giveaway. And I watched it. I verified that it was a good shot, so I was like, I got to vouch for him, but he did not end up winning. I think a couple people ended up besting him, but yeah, I don't know if Brett was just a stud or what, because at first I was like, okay, well, the shots I saw, he was good, so them being 5-under is not that big of a surprise, but then, yeah, the par streak was a little fishy as far as I'm concerned.
The next time the G.I. Jake show gets together, because I think Jake's out today, there's going to be some stuff to unpack for sure. That'll probably be some muscles on radio.
Yeah, I kind of figured that they would still do a show without him, but I guess he has the namesake of the show, so I guess he pulled rank and said no. G.I. Jake show without G.I. Jake. I don't know. I know Marcus was trying to.
There was a coup happening, I thought.
I don't know if they successfully did it or not, but. Successful weekend for us here in Knoxville. Successful weekend for the Vols up in Lexington. The baseball team wins a top 5 showdown. We'll dive into that after the break. I think it's the biggest story in Knoxville right now. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach?
Another one bit the dust. Kentucky bit the dust as Tennessee continues to win baseball series. Haven't lost one since opening weekend against Alabama. This was the biggest one so far in terms of a national perception. And gotta say, I was a little frustrated on Friday night as Tennessee blew that game 1. But they bounced back on Saturday in big fashion with a statement first inning, able to get enough out of Drew Beam to get that win. And then in game three yesterday, Sam, I don't know how you felt watching it, but it felt to me like it was the game I've been waiting for Tennessee, and not necessarily the pitching you were waiting for, right? But to me, I wanted to see how the team would respond when sometimes things weren't going well, especially on the road.
Sure.
Through the first, 4 innings, I thought the offense was pretty dead outside of the Christian Moore 2-run home run after Stark had walked. That was pretty much the only offense. Everyone else, all the other at-bats, didn't go very well. And then, Kentucky comes out, gets a lead. Adds another run the next inning. and it's 6-2, and you're like, okay, now what are you going to do? There's still enough time to get the offense going. What are you going to do? And they responded immediately in the top of the sixth, and then you know, ended up scoring, what was it? I guess 11 runs in the final five innings of the game.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I think that's exactly where I looked at in that game too. I think, you know, there haven't been maybe like a ton of opportunities so far for this year to really respond in that situation, because, you know, you've been kind of winning most of those games, and you just kind of haven't had a time where you've gone down big, I would say, kind of late into the game, and especially one of these SEC opponents and on the road, like you said. So I think that response was great, and you got the response from, you know, from those leaders of your team and those guys that are kind of those spark plugs that, you know, just kind of get the boys going in the dugout and get that energy going high. And I mean, I just think that those guys drive the winning on this team, and you can really tell about it when Vitello talks about these guys and everything. But I just think this was a very important win, especially for the back half of the season and just kind of being able to try to chase them in the SEC standings.
Yeah, got to give a shout out to Tony V. My bad for the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Thinking it was dumb that Blake Burke was batting second. My bad. The transformation of Blake Burke should be used in every recruiting pitch, both for high schoolers and transfer portal guys from now until the end of time, because what Blake Burke has done from last year to this year, it needs explanation. I don't understand how he's gotten so much better, how he's raised his batting average, you know, 130 points from a junior year to a senior year. That's crazy to me. And Tennessee's top of the lineup, Christian Moore and Blake Burke. I mean, has Tennessee had a better 1-2 punch? Or not even 1-2 punch, just better two guys in a lineup?
Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, those are two just monsters.
And then you got Billy Amick right after that.
Yeah, I mean, and it was nice to see Tears back batting this weekend and coming through big in some moments. You know, Dylan Dreiling is going to give you a good at-bat. Like, Tennessee's top five guys in the lineup, I can't imagine there's anybody better in the entire country. And Moore and Burke are playing at a level that, again, I don't think anybody at Tennessee has done, at least not since 2000. I mean, I won't speak on the team in the 90s. I was too young to really pay attention.
How would you rank that top five in the order versus the 22 team? I can't quite recall the specific order of that, but it's got to be neck and neck, if not better.
Overall, the lineup's numbers are better than 2022, and that's with having, you know, guys at the bottom of the lineup that haven't really been coming through for you. So I'm going to imagine statistically this year's team blows that top five out of the water, if I was just guessing, just because the bottom of the lineup hasn't given you anything and you still have better numbers overall.
Yeah, I would say that this team is probably better. It's just, this team is so balanced to me. You've just got such a great look at everything. You know, you've got such great balance with your righties and lefties. I just think you've got guys that are drawing out good ABs and some guys that are just immediate power threats. And yeah, I just think that this team is really, this lineup is almost just meshing together perfectly right now at the right time.
They exploded games two and game three. Game one was a pitching duel. Game one was, you know, your traditional maybe Major League Baseball game. And you had a couple of bad defensive moments that cost you that game on Friday, game one. But you bounced back, and you came up big, and Christian Moore had 8 hits in like 24 hours.
Insane.
Just like an absolute monster. They couldn't get him out. And they weren't just like singles. He was crushed to the ball. 4 home runs in 24 hours of those 8 hits. Is that right?
Yeah. No doubters, too.
Yeah.
I mean, just crushing the ball.
Yeah, it was.
I was just sitting on my couch giggling at that last one. Yeah. As the Kentucky announcers were like, well, that's no good. I think they'd let out a oh no whenever he hit it, like oh no.
The sadness from those announcers made those home runs even better too. They're like, man, that's another from Christian Moore.
No, that last one was uh-oh. Yeah. Uh-oh. He's saying as the ball was leaving.
Uh-oh.
I thought the the vibe of the whole series. I got to watch at least a little bit of all the games. I watched most of them on Saturday and Sunday, but felt like it was kind of regional-ish. You know what I mean? It had some serious intensity, which that's impressive too, you know, that the boys rose up and just took care of business. I really felt outside of that, based on what I saw, outside of that seventh inning on Friday night, I don't want to make it sound like it was domination, but it felt like the team, for the most part, there was only an inning or two where I didn't feel like they were in charge of this thing. But Kentucky was good. They were definitely good.
Kentucky's a top 15 team.
Yeah.
They ran into a top 5 team.
They're definitely better than top 15. I think they're a top 10 team for sure.
I was impressed.
To me, it just didn't feel like they had very many arms at all, really.
Yeah, that's what I wondered. Like, their ERA is top 3 or 4 in the conference, and I'm kind of – I don't know if that's about who you played against or what, although the conference top to bottom is pretty tough.
So. Yeah, but they've definitely had one of, if not the easiest schedule so far in the SEC prior to this weekend. Like, I don't know. Like, top 15 to me is solid. Like, I mean, I think that's a team that's going to host a regional. I don't think they're going to host a super regional. Sure, Sam, if you're saying they're 10 versus 13, I mean, we're not really saying anything too different. Yeah. But to me, Tennessee was just in a different weight class is how I felt. I didn't watch that Kentucky team and think they had a lot of the elite top-end talent. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe I'm not got the trained college baseball eye. But I came in like not even thinking or knowing if they were top 15. So I thought if you're Kentucky, at least you showed like, hey, if we do a couple different things, we could beat anybody. I'm not saying you could go to that sad if you're Kentucky. Like Bob said, it felt like a regional. If you're Kentucky, I think coming out of the weekend, your realistic goal now is to make a super regional. I think that's their goal. Tennessee's goal is make Omaha. I think that's just the difference right now between those two teams. Credit to that catcher, though. I mean, to go out there with his hamstring and – it seemed like he was gutting it out, and he was coming up big.
I think he's kind of one of their spark plug guys.
Well, I just kept talking about how he was a team leader and everything, and how, you know, there's no chance he was sitting out. So, like, credit to him. I mean, to play while you're hurt's one thing, but to catch while you're hurt. Like,
hamstring.
Yeah. Yeah, like your hamstring. I imagine every time he sat down or crouched down, got in position, he was in a lot of pain. So I will give him some credit there. It was set up for him to have his Kirk Gibson moment, too, in terms of at least tying the game. He made the last out. The tying run at the plate, he was the tying run. Our boy Kirby, Tony kind of just – we joked about that with Kirby last time we talked to him, about knowing how long he's going to have whenever he goes into the game. He's like, nah, I just kind of pitch and just wait to see when Tony comes and gets me. And I imagine a couple of times, especially the night, he's like, hey, can you come get me? Because they are just drilling the ball off of me, and I'm sitting there just kind of laughing. Because Tony's just like, yep, sink or swim. We need a couple more outs. And, two outs, Kirby let the tying run come to the plate. So then Tony pulled the plug and gave his first look to Phillips. And I thought Phillips answered the bellman. That to me was the pitching story of the weekend, maybe. Maybe the second story. But because Combs was awesome.
He was.
That's a guy that had struggled earlier this year that now is a legitimate arm out of the bullpen. So maybe he's story number one, but story number two for me was like, hey, Phillips coming out of the pen, throwing 97 and throwing strikes in a big moment. That's something maybe you could build on and find a new arm for the stretch run. Sam, agree or disagree?
Completely agree. Yeah, I was listening to, you know, Tony a little bit pregame, and he even mentioned Marcus Phillips as kind of being a guy that they're willing to be able to throw out there in those situations. So I think him coming in there in a high pressure, high leverage situation is huge for his confidence and also just kind of this coaching staff's confidence and having other guys in this bullpen that they feel comfortable in and turning to in those big situations. And, you know, like you said, John, I think you kind of the story this weekend, like I think the production that you got from your bullpen and guys that you haven't exactly gotten it from so far this season is kind of the story for me. Like, I don't think you got you didn't get your best weekend from Nate Snead, and that's kind of been the normal guy that you can go to for 3 to 4 innings to kind of patch things together in between that starter and those closers, and I thought they did a great job of kind of navigating around that when he didn't have his best stuff.
Did you hear those announcers? It was the announcers were not good, in my opinion, overall. However, they made a couple good observations. And from time to time, I also felt they were pretty reverential to Tennessee, too. They loved Blake Burke's play yesterday when he threw the guy out at third on the sacrifice bunt. I mean, that was a hell of a defensive play. But also when Phillips was out there to close out the game, there was kind of a pause. I don't know what it was, foul ball or whatever. And they were like, well, when you got a guy who comes from out of nowhere, from Iowa, you know, Tony Vitello's doing something right. I mean, Phillips is, that's the first time I saw him on TV. He's big, man.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Big boy.
You know, he got the midweek start for the first time last week. And, you know, now gets to come in and close out a series win against the top five team on the road. Like, I'd imagine his confidence has reached a level where it needs to. I thought Tony's quote after the game was pretty telling about him, where he talked about Marcus Phillips being an exclamation point, he called him. He says, he reminds me of Garrett Crochet. I'm not comparing the two, but the last guy in our facility to know that Garrett Crochet was good was Garrett Crochet. It's usually the opposite with kids, Tony said. And Marcus, I think, knows he's good and thinks he's good, but he's going to be the last one to realize how good he truly is and can be. And that quote got me fired up talking about that. Not comparing him to Crochet, but just saying, hey, like, this guy needs some confidence, is essentially what Tony's saying. Like, the team you saw kind of rally around him and really, you know, celebrate with him on the mound, that wasn't just like celebrating a team win. That was celebrating like a moment for a player. You know, you had that a couple times. You had tears on Peebles' sack fly. You know, sprint up to him and dap him up. Like, hey, man, way to come through. Way to get it done, because, you know, he'd been struggling. And Tony gave him an opportunity to give us the go-ahead run with the bases loaded and no outs. You know, it would have taken a real mess up to not get that go-ahead run in. But instead, Peebles gives a ride to the warning track. You know, maybe aided by the wind a little bit, but came through with the sack fly regardless. And tears ran up to him and was like, hey, man, great job, great job.
Yeah,
like, that was a good moment. And then afterwards, you had the whole team kind of doing that to Phillips. You know, they talked about Blake Burke stopping him before he got to the mound and giving him a pep talk. Like, so I think confidence-wise, the team probably knows, like, hey, this guy needs a couple moments. This guy needs to, like Tony said, figure out how good he is. So for him to come in there and work flawlessly for his one batter, I think hopefully pays big dividends down the stretch for him.
Yeah, we back to Kirby for a second, too. Really significant thing. He came in and, you know, Kentucky was felt like they were on the verge of rolling there, and he got them to ground into that inning double play, which it's just the little things like that. I was with you, John. I was kind of wondering, okay, how long are we going to ride with Kirby? Just because, again, those guys were hitting everybody. You know, it's like sometimes you just have to mix it up. But Kirby gets another win, and, you know, he was a workhorse. I do think some of the pitching stories, that was like the first time I'd seen extensive action of Combs myself, and, man, he was filthy on Saturday for sure.
Yeah, I give Kirby credit for being a workhorse for the double play, because that did keep you in the game, and then you immediately came out and scored five runs in the next half inning. Tears with a great catch on a hard hit line drive. Before that, you know, to keep it at first off the bat, it looked like it was a home run. It was about to be 7-2.
Yeah.
Then it looks like it's gonna be a gapper and score a couple, but he's able to just cut it off and catch the ball. And the announcers are just kind of dumbfounded by that. The announcers cracked me up. You know, knowing that we won the series, it's easier to swallow, but like, they just seemed like a couple of good old boys that wanted their team to win. It was the Kentucky announcers. It always kind of is the home team on SEC Network Plus. So, like, yes, they were biased, but I thought they were pretty funny in like a aw shucks way, not like a actual like, hey, these are funny people. It's just like they are probably in above their head a little bit.
There was one play where they were like, Hunter Inslee makes a great play in center field, and the other guy was like, I think that was Kavaris Tears, and he was like, you know what? I think you're right.
Yeah, that's a big miss.
He's like, I don't think Kavaris Tears is, I don't think Hunter Inslee is black. This guy is black. How do we make this mistake? And they struggled the last couple innings with everything. Like, I thought they ran out of gas, kind of like Kentucky's bullpen did. Like, I thought they ran out of gas because they were, like you said, calling players the wrong name. It seemed like every time Kentucky hit a ball in the air, they thought it was a home run.
And what about, well, was it Tears' home run that they were like, that looks like it's going to be fair? And then they were
oh,
like,
oh, it's out.
Oh, it's out.
Yeah. It like, the go ahead 2-run bomb after one of the best at bats you'll ever see from Kaveris Tears. Like, I mean, he battled back from an 0-2 count, kept fouling pitches off, and then, yeah, crushes one. And, yeah, when you watch the replay and you watch the call, it's like, yeah, that ball's going to stay fair, I think. Oh, wait, it is in the bullpen. Never mind.
Well, and that one, yeah, that one, the play-by-play guy needed to own it because Doug Flynn was actually, I thought, given some decent analysis there, like he was saying, I don't understand why this pitcher's throwing the same – he keeps throwing the same pitch. Mm-hmm. And so when he hits the home run, Flynn was able to say, I told you, man, you know, you can't keep doing that. And was like, okay, decent analysis. But, yeah, the play-by-play guy was like – because I'm watching, I couldn't tell if it was out, you know, watching on TV, and the way they didn't help it, you know, they were kind of like, it's that could be fair. Oh yeah, it's out. That's a home run. Oh God, it was the other thing too. This is really minor, but I kept hearing it because they were whatever their mix was of audio, like field sound. I heard really overly loud the walk up music. And they kept playing, dating myself, but it was Dokken. It was like this song called Mama from Dokken. It was like a rock song. And it's like not all the players have that walk-up music. There's no way. They just kept playing that. That part of it was weird in general, you know, the whole vibe in their dugout with those guys doing synchronized, you know, cheering and all that stuff. It was... Part of it was strange. Part of it, though, was a great – I mean, I thought it was a great series. I really enjoyed the hell out of watching it.
Yeah, we could say that knowing we won it.
Exactly.
If we lost the series, we would come in saying, oh, man, that team was really annoying. Those announcers sucked. The camera people, they messed up countless times in big moments.
Probably students. No, nothing against students, Sam, but, you know, I mean
– You shouldn't be running the TV broadcast of a top five –
Yeah.
Of a top five weekend series.
Yeah, that's a bigger deal. It's like whoever was doing programming for SEC Network, it's like you didn't think about flip-flopping these or putting – I guess that it was already too far gone in terms of crewing and everything else.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what the lead time you need and how far away you plan that. I mean, no one saw Kentucky baseball being this good. But
yeah,
chances were like you should have known Tennessee baseball was going to be pretty good. I don't know what they showed on SEC Network or ESPNU. I don't know. I know there was another top five matchup there, but it seems like, yeah, you should have maybe bumped that up and moved some things around because Kentucky has been a top 15 team the last, you know, couple weeks for sure.
Have you guys heard anything about – and I know there's been a lot of chatter about it. Maybe we can ask when Shumpert comes on later in the show too about A.J. Russell, like his status.
The last updates I've seen is that, you know, they're still waiting on him to come back. They still think he's coming back,
yeah.
But they're going to be cautious with him.
I would guess it's in one of the last series of the year, yeah. Second to last one, maybe last one. Hope that you can have him back for the regional and stuff like that. I just think they're definitely not pushing him.
Yeah.
At this point, it definitely seems, Sam, like he'll be a bullpen guy when he's back, right? Like, I don't see them throwing him back out there as a starter at this point.
No, I don't either. And I honestly think that might be an advantage, too. Like, I think, you know, like I was kind of talking about Snead not having his best weekend in terms of being kind of that long reliever guy. I think A.J. Russell obviously having the experience of last season to kind of be able to do that. I think, you know, and some of these guys stepping up, you've got Stamos and Causey. You know, I feel like you can be confident in one of those guys on a Friday. So a guy like Russell being able to step out of the pen and, you know, give you up to five or six innings at a time, I think is only good things for this team.
Well, you also know that when the tournament time comes around, your rotation kind of gets thrown out of whack anyways.
Yeah.
Like you're going to have to play.
Anyone's available.
Extra games, yeah. And like having extra arms with that they could give you five or six innings starting, I think is a big deal. So like Russell, you need him back. So if you can add Russell back to this rotation slash bullpen and you could find something where Phillips is at least a guy of the bullpen that could come in and get you out of a jam maybe. That would be two huge additions and Tennessee needs a couple extra arms because the lineup's as good as ever. The lineup is national champion good. Hopefully they can come through with some timely hitting and hopefully the arms can give you enough. Big series win though. Any final baseball thoughts?
No, just got a Thursday, Saturday series coming up this week. I think the next 2 weeks in a row are Thursday, Saturdays.
That is correct, as Missouri comes to town, correct?
Yes. Yeah. What, Western Carolina tomorrow night. So hopefully a beat goes on here this week.
All right, got a little basketball news we could get to. Stick with us.
Are you?
Back at the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Again, one more shout out to White Claw and their vodka sodas. They help make Saturday run smoothly. Appreciate White Claw for their support. Please drink responsibly. All right, Bob, give me the scuttlebutt or the scoops. Tennessee basketball's roster still not set. We have passed my noon deadline that I set on Friday. So what? Where are we at right now?
Well, I would say things are getting interesting. Yes, you had your noon deadline on Tobe. There's been no word at all on Tobe, although I would argue it seems that things may be getting clearer anyway. Because he's not even in Knoxville. Maybe back now, but as of last night, he was spotted, and I've seen the photograph, he was spotted at the Phoenix airport. Now, this might not mean anything. You know, my first inclination was, oh, okay, maybe he's out visiting University of Arizona in Tucson. I don't know. Maybe there's something else going on that's, you know, personal family business. Who knows? But here's the point. I felt that we talked about this on Thursday morning before Coach Barnes' presser, and we talked about, again, some of the things I had been hearing in the background, and that is maybe, you know, maybe we're not waiting on Toby, you know, and then Barnes confirmed that, and I thought said it kindly, but maybe Toby's, I'm starting to wonder if he really is not in the picture. And the reason I say that, that's just my opinion here, but it's after Barnes put that press conference statement out, which was, again, as kind as it could be, we love him, but he's got to make up his mind. Well, we're 72 hours later, and he's not even in Knoxville, and there's no word on any level of recommitment intention, nothing. And at the same time, yesterday, we saw news that Felix Okpara, who is a 6'11 rising junior, so has a couple years of eligibility, played at Ohio State. He entered the portal. And word is, from a lot of people around town, is that he's been on Tennessee's radar. Again, 6'11", more developed physically than Jonas, for example. Just better put together, has a great motor. I talked to a friend of mine who knows ball and is tied to Ohio State, and he said he also lives here and is a Tennessee fan as well, and he was like, this guy could be better than Jonas. He only averaged about 7 points, 6 boards a game at Ohio State, but started 34 games, blocked 2.5 shots a game. Sounds like there's a lot of potential. Maybe the reason he's transferring out is the arrival of Aaron Bradshaw from Kentucky. So maybe there's not enough room at the five for a guy who started 34 games at Ohio State. But this guy is in the picture now, and it just makes you wonder, again, if he was already on the radar as a possibility of entering the portal, and given what Barnes said on Thursday about Tobe, I don't know. Could this be Tobe's really off the radar in general?
It seems as if Rick Barnes had the same deadline that I had, as we are yeah. now moving on, and that's how I feel. Now, we do have a little precedent, a little, last year with Josiah, where, you know, like it looked like he was gone for a long time in the offseason, then all of a sudden, you know, the spots fill up. You bring in Chris Ledlum from the Ivy League, and you know, he looks like he's going to be a Josiah replacement. And then, you know, the NBA dreams get put on pause, and All of a sudden, Josiah looks around and says, yeah, like, hey, I'm coming back. To the point where I remember people were like, well, there's not a scholarship. It's like, yeah, it's fine. He's going to get an NIL walk-on deal, and he'll be fine. They'll take care of his payment, his school there. And then, of course, Ledlam leaves. It takes care of itself. And Josiah's back in the starting lineup. But, like, it kind of happened last year with Josiah, where it looked like, you know, he was gone, the team's moving on. And then he found himself, you know, there and back in the starting lineup. So I'm not, you know, 100% closing the door on Awaka. But as far as I'm concerned, I have personally moved on. And the team now has to go out and find a center. And you got a name that makes a lot of sense with this Felix. Akpara?
I think that's it. Akpara, yes.
That's how it looks like it sounds. This Felix Akpara, who has ties to Tennessee, who played high school basketball in Chattanooga, and according to our friend Ryan Schumpertz, you know, played high school basketball with Cam Carr and Julian Phillips at Link Academy. So, like, there's at least a relationship there with Cam Carr. There's a relationship with Tennessee, the state. There's an opening right now, a job posting. Need a big man, need a center.
Yeah.
One that, you know, likes playing defense would be nice. And it looks like this guy likes playing defense. He was second in the Big Ten in block shots. So I think this one makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, this contact I mentioned who's got Ohio State ties said this would be a great get for UT, talking about Akpara. Has a better motor, way more upside, really better than they do today, in my opinion. So I don't know if that's about toughness, if that's what he's talking about or what, because offensively he's got lesser numbers as far as points scored. But
yeah, I can't go that far, and I'm not going to act like I watched a lot of Big Ten basketball. I didn't. But to say he's better than Jonas right now, man, that seems surprising. That seems like a reach. Now, saying that he could be as good as Jonas was next year and says he could do that, maybe, but like I don't see how we'd have that evidence that right now a guy that, what it seems like you pointed out, got recruited over at Ohio State with Bradshaw coming up there. I don't know if we could say he's better than Jonas right now. It just seems like a bridge too far for me. Now, you know, the toughness, if you tell me he has a toughness and a motor, that's a positive.
Yeah.
If it's somebody that we could rely on to not shy away from big games and rely on to, you know, get physical and not get physically intimidated, like that might be better for the makeup of this team.
Yeah.
That I'll be open to, and that I think a lot of fans will talk themselves into if Felix Akpara decides to come to Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know. We'll see. Again, no word back from Igor Milicic either. Again, that's maybe we'll hear something this week. It's weird. It feels like Tennessee's kind of on the edge on a lot of stuff here, and it could be a whole bunch of new personnel at any time, or it could drag out. We heard Grant Ramey tell us last Friday that it could go on a little longer than maybe the fan base would like to know, but that's just the reality of it.
Sam, do you recall when Darling Stone made his commitment? Was it Monday? It was like Monday when we went off the air, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like, man, if you don't have a commitment from these kids when they're on campus within like 48 hours of them, you know, the visit happening, I feel like it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm giving Igor till noon before I'm moving on. You've had enough time, Igor. We're not holding the spot for you anymore, and I'm not holding a spot for you in my heart.
Send him an email.
No. The word will get back to him. Igor, if you hear this.
My people will find your people.
No. There's something about the Polish. There's just something about the Eastern Europeaners that scare me a little bit. I don't want no beef. I don't want no beef. No. My people are not going to find your people. You know, I've seen Taken. I've seen enough movies and heard enough stories. I've seen the Jokic brothers. I know it's not all the same countries. I don't mean to disrespect you and your heritage, Igor, but I'm just saying, no personal beef. I'm just saying we're moving on from a business perspective. Although ranking the Eastern Europeans, Poland's probably the one I would feel the most comfortable scrapping with, I guess. No disrespect to Polish Joe, I guess, if he's listening. Don't come to a remote and try to prove anything to me. But I'm just saying, like, you know, The Czechs seem scary.
Yeah.
The Slovenians seem scary. The Polish, I'll take my chance.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Power ranking your scariest Eastern European countries.
Poland, I've had the good fortune to go into Poland. Nice people, really nice. It is a great country. I can't say enough good things about Poland.
This makes me think that they're scary, and Bob's just trying to get on the right side of
no.
of the beef, talking about great Bob, people, great country. I love it. Please
Bob's
know that it was
some
my co-host.
Polish monster.
Yeah,
with the gun to his head.
I'm trying to debunk the stereotypes because that's what I was a victim of going over. You know, all the old Polish jokes and everything. It was wonderful. Really great place.
I have heard, like, if you go over to some of those to that area, it's either like they're super super nice people, super hospitable, or it's just like, get out of here.
Jonas Adu, according to Jeff Goodman, four schools that are heavily in the mix for him. You don't see Kentucky on this list. Baylor, North Carolina, Arkansas, and Alabama. Ugh.
Ugh. Alabama would kill me.
Yeah.
Kill me.
Is Alabama worse than Kentucky?
Honestly, maybe.
In this era, yes.
Really?
Well, just because Kentucky's got so much they got to build.
Sure.
Yeah, Alabama, you know, they're dialed in. Made a Final Four. Oates is feeling good. Got extended. Still has a lot of talent.
Giving Alabama a big man, too, just hurts.
Yeah,
like, they had Grant Nelson, but he doesn't feel like a traditional big man, you know.
No, yeah, Jonas feels like he could be a really good rim protector while everyone else is kind of just out there scrambling around.
I mean, there was, yeah, all this chatter really accelerated. I guess it was on Friday about Jonas talking with Kentucky, and some of the stuff I had heard was they're looking at, and they got one commitment over the weekend with Amari Williams, but they were looking at Amari Williams and this guy, his name's Great Osabor from Utah State, and those are their targets. It sounds like if there was contact made with Jonas, it's more like a backup option, you know, and maybe that's all it was, and maybe that's why Jonas, you know, isn't continuing on with them. And now they got Amari Williams. They might be getting their guys anyway.
Baylor seems to have promised Scott Drew, like, hey, stay here, don't go to Kentucky, and we will give you some NIL money to work with. We will make sure you have a commitment from some big-dollar boosters, and we'll make sure we're throwing some cash around. Jonas Adu has been linked to them, and then they land Roach from Duke. As he – Duke falls apart. That's strange. And that can't be something that college basketball in general likes just because Duke is a needle mover. I want to say the most watched game of the year was Duke against
NC State.
Yeah. NC State, yeah.
Like, Elite Eight game.
That brand still matters, and they were kind of set to be, you know, the number one team in the country, or at least one of the top three or four teams in the country, and then just had their roster completely decimated as everyone left.
That's a whole baffling scenario to me. I mean, those freshmen, they have a great freshman class coming in. Well, they better be good, because I don't really see them adding anybody from the portal either. It's kind of
– I got one kid from Syracuse this weekend. I saw.
Did they?
Yeah. I can't remember his name, though.
The other thing we haven't talked about, I mean, it is, I think, pretty big news is for Tennessee is they do have a kid coming in for 25. They got a commitment from Dwayne Brown, 6'9", four-star kid out of, I think, Hoover, Alabama. So – I saw somebody post a comment like, well, it feels like more of Tobe. And it's like, why? I don't know why you would say that. Just because he's 6'9", he's not 6'11 or 7 foot. I don't get that. He could still be an effective player.
Well, I also don't think that's an insult.
No, I know.
Well, yeah, but no, I mean, like, if you tell me it sounds more like Tobe, like, okay, like, I'm okay with that. Like, just because we're mad at him right now, like, Tobe was a good rotational player on an Elite Eight team. Like, if you tell me that Dwayne Brown's going to be as good as Tobe, I lock that in. I would be really surprised if, you know, this three-star big man is better than what we got over the last 2 years that with Tobe Awaka. So, like, yeah, like, sign me up for that. If you told me that he would be that type of player, I'm taking that. That's a guy that could play, you know, some minutes for you on in a top program.
Just sounds kind of like a Barnes recruit, right? Somebody who can, you know – not a five-star, but somebody he can develop. And Let's hope.
Yeah, you hope that when you look at his profile and you hope that he is someone that is willing to come to Tennessee and like you said, develop. And 247 has him as a 3-star. I guess the composites have him as a 4-star, so people are calling him a 4-star.
Right.
And I guess you beat Alabama for him. Were there any other big schools, I guess, mixed?
I thought it was Mississippi State. Mississippi
Alabama's, like, listed on the commitment list. I guess it came down to Tennessee and Mississippi State.
Tennessee were his final two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did Alabama want him? It said he had an offer, but I don't know.
No, they want Jonas now.
I guess they want Jonas now, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like, you go into Alabama, you get the state's number one player. We'll see if he, you know, is a factor here in the upcoming years. But he does seem like a guy, like Bob said, that you come here and you try to develop and have him ready by his sophomore year.
All right, so noon today for Igor.
Yep, and that's me being kind, Igor.
Yeah,
really,
I've shut the door on him.
Honestly. Yeah, honestly, I was going to say my patience with you is wearing thin already. Like Sam said, once you get off campus, I'll give you a day. You know, if Darlin Stone, we gave him a day to go home, maybe, you know, work some leverage, try to squeeze out a couple more dollars, feel wanted, sleep on it, if you will. That way you don't feel like you're making a rash decision. Like, hey, I don't want to commit right now, coach. I'm going to go home and talk about my family and pray about it. And Rick's like, okay, that's fine. And then you get the announcement Monday. Like, that's fine. But, Igor, you were here on what? Like, you were here Monday to Wednesday? And it's Monday again?
Just be careful when you go start your car.
It's electric. I don't have to have this started. It's always on. It'll be fine. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two with some stuff you missed from the weekend. Called About Last Night / About Last Weekend. Ryan Shumpert at 8:20. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par?